Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Boom, clap the sound of my ass, the beat goes on and on.
What's that? You've been singing that all morning. Who's this?
Well, the correct lyric is boom, beat. Clap the sound of my heart. That's okay. By Charlie XCX, icon Charlie XCX. Boom, clap the sound of my ass is a tweet that was made years ago, which has lived in my head rent-free since.
That reminds me of that Twitter account that's like the returning of all the vines, and they're just posting all the vines from like 10 years ago. I don't know if you've seen this yet, but they're taking off. I wasn't a Vine kid. I was a bit too old for that, but people love vines.
Nah, I was there for the Vine moment, but I feel like, you know, Vine currency is devalued massively since. Like, someone can go, they've got a knife, oh look out, they got a knife, or like, oh, the road work ahead, I sure hope it, you know, 5 years ago I'd have gone, ha, yeah, I remember Vine, and now I'm just kind of like, yeah, road work
I
ahead.
Feel like it was the TikTok of its day, but it was it's definitely a time, definitely a point in time. But speaking of a point in time, it's the Untitled Partner Podcast, the UBP, whilst Jules Gill's away doing whatever he's doing, man's doing a business left, right and centre, but I'm Scott Tilford, that is you in Patterson.
Hello. Sorry, hello. I'm really appreciative that you and BP fits in so seamlessly.
If we've got three people on, it's the 3BP, and it's the you and BP if and any other time. But yes, we always take people's questions, talking points, whatever there is going on in the industry. And so we'll just get through as many as we can. Question from Willie Araya, who says, Thwip, thwip, Spider-Man 2, performance or fidelity? I also have more Spidey questions, but more are they are all spoilerific. So not just yet. Well, me and Ewan, and I think Dan Durkin are going to do a Spider-Man 2 spoiler cast, hopefully next week, because we got all the thoughts on that game. But yeah, what did you play in, performance or fidelity?
Performance. I think I put it for the review. I tried a little bit of it in fidelity, and like, it's one of those things where if you sit with fidelity mode for long enough, it becomes negligible, where it's like, okay, I can play it in this way. But once you're in that performance and you get used to the speed and momentum, like, it's performance, especially because they have all the ray tracing features as well.
Yes.
What question I had for you, Scott, because when I started up the game, it had film grain cranked all the way
up. I put that on half.
Yeah, I turned it down after a while. Like, it looked good, but, you know,
I'm like a stickler for like an artist's vision. So I was like, well, if all the Insomniac art department think this is the way, then okay. But
that's the thing. I find it so anxiety inducing now that I'm getting all these different display options, because in my brain, I want them to include this is our intent mode, where it's like, this is how we think you should play it. But obviously it's like, it's different because everyone's different, got different TV settings. Everyone's got different monitor settings. So it's a case of like, you do have to calibrate things, which is too much responsibility for this Spider Boy to have.
Literally, that was my thing, because I have, like, at the start of the generation, I just splooged on an LG CX, the big old, the 50, what? The 50 or the 55-inch, I forget what even TV I have, but it's the fancy LG CX TV. I was like, let me get this for the new generation of consoles, and I won't have to think about any of this stuff. It'll take care of
everything. I remember this moment in time. You were so excited.
I spent a whole paycheck on it, and then when it arrived, I just looked at it, and I was terrified. I was just shaking, looking at it, going like, oh my God, there's £1,000 in that
like
box.
Like the monkeys in 2001 A Space Odyssey, looking at the giant plinth.
Just pawing at it and sort of not knowing what to do with it. But yeah, that TV allows for 120 frames a second, allows for the variable refresh rate stuff. But this game, Spidey 2, and I think Ratchet and Clank Rift Apart had it as well, has fidelity and performance, but they are then tweaked by whether you have VRR or 120 hertz mode on as well. So I was like, and they're like auto and then on or off or recommended. And I was like, I don't know or care. But I ended up just Googling, what do I do? And there was a Eurogamer article just saying, it was like a TLDR, was just like, turn this, all of them on and put it in fidelity mode. And the VRR and the 120 hertz mode will take care of the frame rate. So you get all the bells and whistles of ray tracing and the beauty of all that stuff, but it runs at about 40 FPS. I think it might actually be more than that with the uncapped frame rate on. But either way, gorgeous, running very, very well, looks beautiful, and it has a really solid frame rate. So I just maxed everything out. But I echo that I hate having to think about it.
I dare not go into the settings of my TV, but to remove the sinful creation that is motion smoothing, get that gone.
Oh, yeah. God, when I got the TV, mostly thanks to Josh Brown recommending tons of articles and videos and stuff to calibrate the TV itself. That's a whole other realm of which parts of this talk to the game and the console stuff that you can just get lost
but
in.
I have no idea, like, how, if I optimize my TV for my games console, is that going to ruin my movie viewing experience? Like, I've not really spent more time with it apart from just get rid of motion smoothing, you ugly, evil thing, and then that is about it.
Like, oh, really? Oh, there's probably a bunch of stuff that you should be tweaking to get all the path levels right and everything.
I gotta get the bash.
Because the thing is, like, there's a game mode. Yeah, all the gradients. You've got the game mode, you've got the movie mode. These days, there's a Dolby Atmos mode.
I know about Dolby Atmos. Yeah. I mean, my sound bar is completely knackered at the minute as well, so I need to get... Funny story, right? It was the Amazon Prime deals the other month, wasn't it? I was like, I'm going to treat myself to a new soundbar because my old soundbar is not working properly. And then I tested out the old soundbar because I'd not used it in a while before I committed to the new purchase. The old soundbar was working fine again all of a sudden. So I was like, okay, that'll save me, you know, £100 and I'll just keep using this one then. Literally the day the sale ends... I try using the soundbar again. Try using Old Faithful, who I'd put a gun to their head the other day. And then it was like, no, not working anymore. So it's like, you were only playing up because you knew that you were about to die. And now I've not got an actual sound. It's really, really bad how unoptimized my home media setup is.
Right.
I need to have a look. Like, I don't even have a proper chair. There's a couch. There's a couch in the living room, right? Uh-huh. But it's not close enough to the TV for my liking. It doesn't give me enough back support. So right. I will literally sit on the floor like a prawn with my back against the couch. And Scott, I'm so terrified about the damage this is doing to my spine. Uh-huh. But to be honest, I'm like 5 years into doing it that way. Afraid to go back.
That's hilarious. I do that when I run out of controllers and I need them to charge and the USB won't reach enough to sit, so I just sit on the floor like a child.
Do you not feel like a little guy when you do that? Like
just a little guy.
I imagine my partner walking into the living room and seeing me playing my games on the floor with my headset on and just going, This is a boy.
You've regressed 20 years.
Yeah.
There's something about that though, about like there's like a childlike innocence to just like the I always think it's funny the shape of a person from like behind when they're sitting down playing something. It's just like that little sort of wad of human, there's like the little like block of human and a little cable coming out the front to the control to the console. But yeah, TV stuff, it's fine when it gets there, but oh my God, is it a maze of stuff to figure out. The other day, before Josh took his leave, which obviously massive shout out to Josh Brown getting through things as best as he can, hopefully be returning soon enough, but we'll see. He told me about all the Dolby Atmos stuff and how one of the screen options for that is like yellow, but if you look at it enough you get used to it, and then that becomes the new white, and then you change all your colors to amend that. And I was like, I'm not doing that. I'm not doing this again. Like, I can't.
It's absolutely terrifying to me. Like, I know for a fact as well that when I discovered the other year that, you know, the way that film scans are transplanted to physical media can sometimes affect the color grading. Mm-hmm. So I've been told that, you know, you think of Terminator 2 Judgment Day, you look at that movie and you think it's very blue. It's a very blue movie.
Yes, yes.
Apparently when it came out in cinemas, it wasn't blue. That's just something that's happened with the transfer of the, like, the actual, like, reel and, like, the files stuff as it's, like, gone along. So there are probably movies out there that we've been watching for years that we've been watching incorrectly the entire time.
Well, there was, The Matrix had, like, a green sort of look to it. And then when
that was always intended. Oh, yeah, with the 4K thing. Yeah,
well, they did the 4K one.
It's
they
like
sort
the same
of
thing with, like, the Lord of the Rings 4K as well. Like, I'm never going to get that because, like, I think of those movies as being green and now they're kind of like a bluey tint. It's kind of, it's scary to me, like, the idea of, like, okay, so the artist has made their thing, but it can be transplanted to a thing that makes it not look right and it won't be immediately clear. In any case, to answer the question, performance mode in Spider-Man 2 is good.
Yeah, mine was, I always got performance these days anyway because I want the responsiveness of a higher frame rate, but I'm lucky enough to have the big stupid TV that can max everything out. So mine's fidelity and then VRR and 120Hz are both turned on or automatic or whatever the hell that thing is. Question from G Malave, who says, what do you think about Insomniac making a Batman Beyond game since they did such a great job on Spider-Man 2, what with the web wing suit and traveling around the city?
Hell yeah!
Yeah, just give it to them.
Sorry, I love Batman Beyond. Batman Beyond is my favorite incarnation of Batman. Mm-hmm. Like, I love that show so much. I mean, big shout out to the DC Animated Universe and to the late Kevin Conroy as well. You know, kind of gutted that he's gone. Yeah, no, I mean, I've been begging for a Batman Beyond game for yonks now. I think, like, I don't see Insomniac doing it because they're the Marvel boys, and I feel they're pretty much, like, they're entrenched in that mythos now, and Sony are reinforcing their Spider-Man allegiances, and, you know, we know we've got Wolverine coming. There are some other random Easter eggs in Spidey for them to do that. But yeah, I think they would smash a Batman Beyond game for sure, apart from the suit design aspects, because there are a lot of annoying over-designed suits in Marvel Spider-Man 2.
I'd be
worried that they just ruin the graceful simplicity of that original suit. I remember for a while ago, I mean, this is like, we're going back like 5 years or so now, that Warner Brothers Games Montreal, they were planning, it wasn't an explicit Batman Beyond game, but they were planning that Damian Wayne future Neo Gotham game, and then that was canned, and then we got Gotham Knights. Yeah, Batman Beyond games need to happen. I think the only Batman Beyond game that we've gotten was like the Return of the Joker tie-in for the PlayStation 1, and that wasn't a good game. I mean, as long as they do it right with the actual suit and they don't do something stupid like what we got with Arkham Knight, where they had the really over-designed Batman Beyond suit where it was like, we're going to put lots of panels.
That thing.
No, simple. I hate this trend of superhero costume design where it's like, how many patched pouches and like lines can we put? It's like, we got over that in the 90s, man. Rob Liefeld is not the moment anymore.
I'm from.
Right, my 90s is Scarlet Spider.
Right.
Give me the denim hoodie Spider-Man, and the 90s Batman Beyond. I don't need, like, pouches. I don't need detail. I don't need, like, it's the MCU effect, isn't it? Like, every costume now has to have a bunch of lines on it.
Oh, I think it looks funny when, like, everyone's in, like, just one big onesie. Like, some of the ones you can get in Spidey 2 are just, like, one giant form-fitting, like, I don't know, vacuum-sealed suit. And I'm just like, that's
It depends on the art style, doesn't it? Like, I feel like if you were going to do a Batman Beyond game, I'd be fine with them doing it with their own interpretation. I feel like Gotham Knights has a decent aesthetic to it, apart from, again, more over-design. Some over-design costumes or whatever. But I would love it if we got someone to go back and revisit the DCAU and do it that way. Again, the big thing here is, like, if you're going to do a Batman Beyond game, you don't have Kevin Conroy to play Bruce Wayne anymore, which is, like, the most, like, biggest
loss
ever.
That could have been
ever.
Such a great way to go. They could have had the Arkham Batman handing down the mantle or whatever. You could have, if that was an alternate timeline where Rocksteady did that instead of Suicide Squad.
That's what I think we know that the timeline as it exists right now is reportedly, I think there was going off like Jason Schreier back when he was working for Kotaku, his reports like years and years ago is that WB Games Montreal, after doing Arkham Origins, which turned 10 this week, and everyone is trying to say that they always loved that game. No, they didn't. I always loved that
you
game.
Did.
I was there from
yeah.
the beginning. But we had they were making a Suicide Squad game after Arkham Origins. That got binned off. And then it was the Damian Wayne Batman game, which allegedly got binned off as well. And then they did Gotham Knights, and then Rocksteady were doing Suicide Squad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League is the least interesting thing you could have done with that mythos. Like, I would have much preferred a Damian Wayne Batman game or a Batman Beyond game.
It feels very just what the business folk wanted next, and it feels from a. It feels like it was made for an era where the Avengers game did well, which was just not the timeline that we're in. We'll quickly say though that for Arkham Knight, as of last night, they've added the Batman, the movie skin.
They've taken
to that
it down.
Game. What?
So I think the story at the minute is that they released it too early. I think they were planning to release that with the Nintendo Switch release, which is December 1st. And I think the Epic Games Store was like, epic! And then like added it in too soon. So it's been taken down now.
Oh, that sucks. I tell you, I really want a 60 FPS mode more than I want that skin, but I mean, sure.
But how mental is it, Scott Telford, that we are 8 years on from Arkham Knight's release, and we are being like, oh, they've added the Batman suit to Arkham Knight and not a new Batman game. We're like, oh man, Arkham Knight, it's back in Matt Reeves' form.
I did something at the end of the last generation where it was like video game developer reputations that died to that generation, and it was like Konami and Rocksteady and just tons of stuff. And the state of nearly all those tiers of devs are just in an absolute hole at the minute. As someone like Rocksteady, I'm so curious what happens after Suicide Squad is out the way, because that thing feels like they're just getting through the mines, excavating the game, just get through it, and then ship something, and then we can all move on. No one wants it anymore. It's not going to sell.
Sefton Hill has left the company as well. Yeah. He was like the big, you know, foundational creative director on the first three. On Rocksteady's Arkham trilogy and Arkham VR, and then I think you're heavily involved in Suicide Squad too. So again, it's kind of like the stuff with Rockstar, isn't it? With the houses like leaving and stuff. It just feels like we're in a. It's a shame. I don't want to cast judgment on the game before it comes out, but just from what has been shown right now, I don't think it has anything that made the Arkham games like why we fell in love with them.
Because the Avengers and Anthem and Gotham Knights have all failed. Like, and I like Gotham Knights a lot, but I think in terms of like but that's also ignoring a lot of the random loot boxy, random drop stuff.
Yeah.
Just to try and enjoy the story and some of the combat and atmosphere. I just don't see it working when it finally gets here. Question from Adam Strawn, What Culture Mains Adam Strawn, who says, if we had to make our perfect video game with the ingredients of a director of our choice, developer of our choice, and genre of our choice, what would we make?
Oh, that's a really good question. I'm going to make an answer here, and it's going to be completely wrong.
like that three-part horse meme.
Yeah. I've got an idea, right? I would love to, if I was a video game developer, I'm basically giving away my golden goose right now. Some Johnny Game Dev could be listening to this right now, and they pitch it and steal it from me. I want an 80s action movie inspired third person shooter in the vein of like Max Payne and Stranglehold?
The
hard boiled sequel. Mm-hmm. I want something done with that. I want it to be like it is kind of almost like it's a brutal kind of not stupidly video game violent, but it's like you got lots of like squibs. Just replicating that grimy like John McTiernan action style movie feel, and like having like just like a straight up, you know, make it like Lethal Weapon-esque, make it Die Hard-esque, like do a whole thing. Like I would love to have something like that. I mean, it's very uninspired to be like, I would like a third person shooter game, please. but if I could do that, action game, make it very 80s, like. Not like the stereotypical 80s we're getting a lot of right now. Not like synth 80s. Not people trying to like, you know, be Miami Vice. I want like, I want like an Arnie-esque, Sly-esque, Bruce Willis-esque thing. Mm-hmm. I don't know who I'd get to direct it. I'm Patrick Redding did a great job on Splinter Cell Blacklist, which was I think that's like one of my benchmarks for like solid action games or whatever. Obviously Kojima's a big action movie fan, but I know that his instincts story-wise are very, very convoluted, and I just want to shoot some dudes. I just want, Scott, to translate the experience you had watching Hard Target at my birthday earlier in the year in video game form.
I would massively take that. My dream project, it's pretty much what Sifu was last year. I miss martial arts in video games, any type of it. I miss roundhouse kicks, I miss environmental interaction. I want to launch a dude through a window, and I can't launch anywhere near as many dudes through windows as I want to. I quite like, actually, side note, in Spider-Man 2, when you unlock the ability to hold triangle so you can web a guy, and then you hit either of the shoulder buttons to whip them left or right, whip their hair back
and
forth.
Good physics, yeah.
And they can go, like, flying through, like, bits of debris, or you can hit both triggers to slam them down. I want more environmental interaction. So my dream game is pretty much just what Sifu set in motion, but more like The Raid, like a way more brutal version of that. Just let me do really cool moves. Let me take on three or four dudes at once. Let me do group fighting. Let me manage, you know, enemies that way. And cartwheel off the wall in slow motion. I love slow-mo. I love photo modes. I love stuff like that. Bring back early 2000s style. Let me see the bullets as they pass by my head.
I think we have a similar vision here. Because, like, maybe. One thing I wanted to say as well is, like, because I wanted, like... do Jean-Claude Van Damme-esque roundhouse kicks. You know, yes. I want to do that with, like, the full like, just get those powerful thighs kicking, you know? I want that. But I would also say, like, you know, in Gotham Knights has come up weirdly.
It's a good game.
Yeah, no, it's a good game. I think, you know, the kind of gun-fu style that they have with Red Hood? Like, yes. You could do a whole thing where, like, up close in combat, whether you have, like, a knife equipped or, like, a piece of debris or, like, guns, you could have, like, Arkham-style free flow or, like, Sifu-esque combat up close where you're doing, like, gun takedowns and, like using gun catters and, like, using, like swords, knives, bricks, whatever you can get up. And then you would also have that third-person cover shooter type element where it's, like, that gun ballet Max Payne style thing. That is what I want.
Did you play Dead to Rights back on the original Xbox or PS2?
No, I didn't. Should I add that to my Xbox?
Dead to Rights rules. They put a version of it out, because they remade it. It did. So there's Dead to Rights and Dead to Rights 2, and then they rebooted it and did another Dead to Rights, and then that one bombed and it just died forever. But the original Dead to Rights, the Xbox version or whatever, that has martial arts and really cool slow motion takedowns where you can hit a button during the slow motion, during the animation to put it into slow motion. Aww. And then you can hit a different button to get different camera angles on the takedown. But then you also have gunplay and slow motion dives. It was that little era where Max Payne blew up and then we got True Crime and Dead to Rights and everyone could dive in slow motion. It
just
was great.
Just want to, like, fire a full clip of a Beretta and then, like, reload it really cool. Like, I'm like...
I want to run while I'm reloading. That's my thing. Like, I want to throw the clip away.
Yeah, throw the shotgun away and do that. Like, Sleeping Dogs did that quite well. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed that. Max Payne obviously does it really well.
That's right. Literally has that. Every time you finish a clip, you throw the gun away, like, and your dog brings you
kind
another
of
one.
Like, translating that super hot experience, but make it real time and in third person, and it would be like a fun 80s vibe. That's what I want.
I didn't even talk about my developer or director of choice. My genre is going to be the martial arts thing. Developer, maybe just Slow Clap again, because they did Sifu. Or you could have the Super Hot team, because they have only done two games so far as I know. Director, Mr. Strawn didn't specify game director, so I'd probably bring in Gareth Edwards, or the dude that did The Raid, just to literally point at things and be like, no, make it more brutal. Add a knife to that.
Given there's so much Remedy buzz at the minute, I'll say Remedy can make my 80s game. Basically make it like Max Payne, but not noir.
Yeah, just let Sam Lake flex his more over-the-top muscles or something.
Get a Hawaiian shirt going, get the mullet going.
Shout out to Max Payne 3's Hawaiian shirt. Shout out to Max Payne 3.
Max Payne 3 game is
unbelievably overlooked.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Question by Matt, who says, enjoy the physical media chatty that we did. We just did a whole chatty of the week on whether physical media should just die out, whether or not. Another point, when our AI overlords turn off the internet, physical media will be worth its weight in gold. Meanwhile, what's your favorite moment in the Metal Gear Solid series? Have a great weekend. That's a hell of a pivot. I guess there's a lot of AI in Metal Gear Solid 2. Favorite moment in Metal Gear? I know you're not as big of a Metal Gear fan.
Oh, no, I mean, I enjoy the OG. Well, not the OG. Yeah, the OG trilogy, like MGS1, MGS2, and then MGS3, Snake Eater. I enjoy those, and I never played... 4 because
you didn't play Guns of the Patriots.
Didn't have PS3, so I didn't.
I bought a PS3 for that game.
And obviously, I loved Phantom Pain. I mean, my favorite moment is probably going to be like, because I think it's probably one of the greatest boss battles of all time. Your confrontation with the boss in Snake Eater, like that is like so cinematically well done.
Yes.
That to me is like the coolest thing. And I also love, again, as a big Lee Van Cleef fan, like I love Revolver Ocelot. I love Ocelot showing up in anything. Contention as well for Phantom Pain when Kaz reunites with Venom Snake and it's like they have their big bromance together again. I'm here for that too.
There's that bit where Solid Snake and Otacon in Metal Gear 2 have like their super secret handshake where they sort of slap hands both ways and then fist bump and then give it a hug and whatever. I think for me, young me was just obsessed with Metal Gear Solid 1. That thing changed my perception of video games. I dressed up as Solid Snake for a Halloween that year for my first school and had a little cardboard gun and I was asked to put it away because it was a little cardboard gun.
Put it away, Scott.
I love the first Metal Gear. So for me, it's either going to be the body corridor where you find that body a corridor just full of mutilated bodies and you don't know what the hell is going on because you're in the middle of this other facility that you're infiltrating and then you find this weird cyborg ninja who's half invisible and whatever, that thing's great. Or it's the thing is right now, because the Master Collection's out and there'll be a lot of people checking out Metal Gear Solid 1, 2 and 3, obviously that game is old and it should be you should be able to talk about spoilers, but there's something near the end of that game where a character is about to die. And they say a cornered fox is more dangerous than a jackal. I always love that line, and in context, it's brilliant. And so, if people haven't checked out Metal Gear, it's well worth playing. It seems like the Master Collection is terrible, but they might patch it.
And it costs 50 quid?
Oh, dude, it's like the version of Metal Gear Solid 1 that's in there. It actually looks worse than the PS1 one.
I remember getting the HD collection when it first came out on Xbox 360 like 10 years ago, and it cost me like 15 quid. Blatant levels of greed from Konami.
It's very Konami. Yeah. Like, the thing is, like they've included a lot of really cool little gubbins. Like there's a lot of making of stuff in there. There's a lot of like you get the original MSX Metal Gears as well, like the old 2D ones. It's cool, but like the price point sucks. And then the actual emulation that they've done, the actual work they've done to the guts of it is nothing. Like,
apparently, it's unplayable
little
on mouse and keyboard.
Apparently, but even things like when you pause, I think it might have been patched now, but when you pause the original Metal Gear, it takes about 15 seconds to load the pause menu. Like in a literal sense, you just sit there on a freeze frame. So they need to get there with it. But yeah, at the minute, it's very Konami. TJ says, what are the wrong lessons that AAA developers and publishers will learn from Baldur's Gate 3? I think it'll just be overly convoluted lore, or the idea that they need to try and take an old IP and then do something, try and do something over the top with it. But Baldur's Gate is impossible to replicate, really.
Do you think we'll get, and again, this is more of an observation that goes hand in hand with both Baldur's Gate being amazing and doing very well, but also D&D's resurgence and popularity in general. Yeah. Do you think we're about to get a bunch of, like a big sword and sorcery resurgence in video games?
It's kind of overdue because like Stranger Things was responsible for the D&D boom. And then we've had like 3-4 years of that now, but no real I mean, Baldur's Gate is a D&D universe game.
Yes, it is.
As far as I know.
Yeah.
But still, like, nothing with that name in it. Like, the D&D movie, it did way better than anyone thought it was going to. And it's like, but there's not a definitive D&D game to point at. Maybe because the lifeblood of that IP just is in actual real-life DMs and improvising scenarios and things like that. And maybe there's no way to do a video game version of it. Because it's not like there are any really up-there D&D games. There are things in that universe, but they're more... You know, they're not as experimental kind of thing in terms of the way levels are laid out or the way that you go through combat scenarios or something. I don't know how the hell you do a D&D game that responds to the level of improvisation that you need to have.
From what I've heard of, because I haven't played Baldur's Gate 3, because I know it's going to be a massive thing. It's one of those that I'm going to just wait and get to, like,
months
from now or whatever. But I do know the level of freedom that game ascribes you is that you could literally be playing in co-op with a buddy. And they could be talking to an NPC that is guarding, like, a thing, and you could sneak in as the other player to, like, get into that location. That level of freedom and choice is what we need going forward. And that is kind of already translating the vibe of a D&D session.
True.
I don't know. Like, I feel like there is got to be... Maybe you'll have, like, virtual D&D, like, experiences where you'd have, like, a DM and, like... Well, like, a virtual DM almost. And you'd have, like, set... But again, like, the whole thing is that you want freedom and improvisation. That's something, not really something AI can do.
If it's, like, the wrong lesson, though, I guess they just shortcut to the satisfaction of that. And they just, like, try and... on rails that stuff instead. Like,
I think that the wrong lesson that will be taken away from here is that we'll get lots of vaguely generic D&D-esque fantasy games and not like actual, like, you know, I think, like, there's been a weird, you know, I'm going on a bit of a rant here, Scott, but you know when, like, a new game gets revealed and the trailer for it, and, like, it's just so typically game lore. This is game lore where it's like, oh, the immortals guarded the Phoenix Flame. And I'm like, okay, I don't know what
any of that means.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I need less of that. I need proper considered world building that isn't trying to just be vague fantasy thing.
That's what I mean about them just going like, oh, so people like big, dense lore. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's have a whole bunch of terms and whatever. Because, I mean, Baldur's has that, but you're aware that it's part of this vested long-term series. But yeah, I don't know, Baldur's Gate is such an anomaly in terms of how much it costs to make, and like the fact that it came out once and it got like a 7 out of 10 from IGN, didn't do that well, and then they went back to the drawing board and the owner of Larian himself put all of his personal money in and managed to get it even further down the line. So I don't know how the hell they try and copy that thing. But me, Stevie, and Adam Strawn did a podcast on Baldur's Gate 3 about how why it's potentially the game of the year for this year. So there's a lot of discussion in there about the way it all came together. But question from KJ Brettel Aldridge, who says, all the talk of Legion Go and other PC handhelds being a Steam Deck killer, but everyone's forgot the Switch 2. If that has the raw power and the third-party support, it could blow everything out the water. I included this because we don't talk about Switch that much. I know you don't have a Nintendo Switch, but I thought, what's your thoughts on the old Switchy boy if they nail a bigger one?
Yeah, I mean, I think we discussed it briefly like the other week or so. Yeah, no, I think like again, like I'm so far along in my life now that I'm not a Nintendo person. I don't think I will be. However. I think it's a really cool thing. I think, like, again, like, we talk about, like, how, you know, expensive the PlayStations and Xboxes are, and those price points will go down. The Switch 2 will have extra longevity on its side as well, because it's, like, you know, I feel like, obviously, like, Nintendo refreshes its consoles about as regularly as, like, the PlayStation and Xbox do. But you have the added benefit of, like, that impeccable first-party offering. And if it can... have those third-party games, and maybe that is partially why the Switch has been, you know, more widely, you know, it's been so successful, is that it does have that third-party support in some places. I know, like, again, like, I'm enthusiastic about the Switch 2.
I love the idea. I love the reality of you discovering all of Nintendo's backlog now, because there's so much there.
I mean, I had a Wii. Okay. My dad had a Wii, and I loved Donkey Kong Country so much.
Yes!
Donkey Kong Country Returns. I'm a big fan of Donkey Kong. If they get another Donkey Kong game going, then maybe they'll get me in.
The rumors are that because they've done the open world, like Mario Odyssey. I mean, Mario's always had open zones or whatever, and then Odyssey was like the biggest levels ever. And then they did an open world, semi-open world Kirby game where it was like the biggest levels ever. Mm-hmm. The rumor is that the next character for that is Donkey Kong, which I guess is more like Donkey Kong 64.
I don't have enough money for Donkey Kong.
DK Country is on the Switch library, so if you've got a Switch, you can dive back into that.
It's one of the best games I've ever played.
It is. That game was mind-blown at the time as well, like the graphics of it. Like that thing, that was one of those games graphics can't get any better than this moments back then. Question from Honest NPC, who says, UBP, 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 thoughts on the fact that there was once a time in gaming we would get multiple games in a franchise in one generation, Gears 1 to 3, Uncharted 1 to 3, etc., and now we may only get one per console cycle. Are games just getting too big in scope? Game of the year is Baldur's Gate 3. True. Yeah, thoughts on this. I remember seeing something that Jason Schreier mentioned, where if something goes into development now that's a AAA game, you're aiming for an 8 to 10 year turnaround window. And I was like, that can't stay the norm. At all.
It's just sad trombone noise, isn't it? Like, I don't know what else to say. Like, it's I feel like, yeah, we're in a state now where games are too big. Like, I love Marvel's Spider-Man 2 for what it is.
I was just gonna say, Spidey's a good indication of like that's three games in the same engine on the same generation.
That's fair. Like, it's a big, like, it's a big game. I think like I love Red Dead Redemption 2. It's my favorite game of all time.
Mm.
But I'm also, I don't know, like, I feel like I've had this conversation with different people. My cousin was saying to me the other week that he feels like he was chill with where graphics were 10 years ago. And I kind of think, like, yes, I agree. And I'm also kind of like, but now that we've touched the sky, do we have to keep going forward? And, like, obviously the whole thing with this industry is that it needs to keep innovating. It needs to keep pushing forward. There are technologies being developed all the time. New engines, new whatever. You might get left behind. I don't know. I think we're approaching critical mass, aren't we? This conversation's come up quite a few times across different podcasts over the last month. And I think I am, right now, my mindset is I would like to have more, and I would like it to cost less and hopefully, you know, be easier on developers themselves. Mm-hmm. Because we're in this situation now where not only are we not getting, like, we're not forging as many memories as we used to on previous console generations or whatever. Mm-hmm. I'm also worried that, like, Suicide Squad Kill Justice League is a perfect example. Like, that game was built with what feels like when Fortnite was popular. Yes, I mean, Fortnite is popular, obviously, still, but it felt like it was trying to be like a live service thing, trying to be a Destiny thing, you know, but it's also not live service. It's like a co-op thing, and it's just got lots of bouncy, jumpy stuff.
They don't even know what it is.
But it just feels like we're getting to that situation now where people are going to overcommit to these, companies are going to overcommit to trends that are completely past their point in time. And at what point do they make a big enough loss for a wider conversation to happen and be like, okay, you know, we are the only industry working right now where we are investing millions and millions and millions to not see a return on that investment for like nearly a decade. That is bonkers.
Well, look, I mean, the amount of layoffs that there've been in October. I know a lot of that was like the amount of expenditure that happened across the pandemic, the fact that we were all at home, a lot of people were playing more games, but then that led to certain projects being greenlit or certain business ideas being greenlit that maybe aren't going to like meet out over time. But yeah, I mean, something like Spidey's an interesting test case, because this is one of the only modern franchises that has all three installments on modern hardware. Like, Spidey had a PS4 version, so did Miles Morales, but Spider-Man 2 was only on PS5, and the first two games were still shown off as PS5 games anyway. But that's one of those things where economically, like, you can see Insomniac using a lot of the same stuff over those installments to make it work. And like, that's an interesting way to go. And also, like, another test case is like Alan Wake 2. Like, that game looks unbelievable. Like, that game looks absolutely gorgeous. I don't know when it started development, but Control was 2018. So it's like, and Remedy also had to work on that single player component for the Crossfire game. So it's like, they've managed to turn that over and managed to put I think it's because it's on Unreal 5. I could be wrong. But Alan Wake, regardless, looks absolutely gorgeous. I would say has industry best graphics or presentation. I would say better than Spider-Man 2. But it's one of those things where, like, how was that possible? And it's like Hellblade 2 is going to be coming out with absolutely stunning graphics as well. And Ninja Theory's whole thing was that they were able to make a AAA-looking game on an indie budget, for the first Hellblade anyway. And so, like, it seems like there are certain examples of how to do this more economically rather than just spend half a literal $1 billion on graphics.
Like, you look at something like, I mean, this is probably like not the right example to give because the game doesn't look good. It's probably not going to be that big in terms of scope either. But you look at something like Skull and Bones, which was first announced, what, like 2018, 2019, 2018?
2016 for Sea of, when Sea of Thieves was first mentioned? It was whenever Sea of Thieves was first mentioned.
And Bones announced, this is professional, I'm checking right now. It was announced in, oh my god, why can't I find this? Okay, so it says that, yeah, like, it was due to release initially in 2018. So its announcement must have been like 2017 or something, right?
I think so. It was just after Sea of Thieves. Remember Ubisoft swinging in?
It was first announced at E3 2017.
I was so close.
Right. Uh-huh. We are now in 2023, and it's just been delayed again to 2024. That is 7 years.
It's not even going to do anything.
And like that, like the economics of it all is scary to me.
Yeah.
And I don't know if the industry is prepared to have these conversations right now, because everyone wants to keep pushing forward and creating more in-depth and immersive and personal experiences. But maybe there is a point in time when we have to look back and go, okay, maybe we don't need to have the technology be this way. But it's such a complicated issue.
I've long said that I would take 10 far smaller games from Naughty Dog than one every sort of 6-7 years. Just personally, I want to see what those creatives come up with, those art departments, what ideas they have, because I guarantee it, they're not all thinking incredibly drab, dour, looking at the floor.
More Lost Legacies, please.
Yeah, little one-off things like that. There's definitely like a breadth of production budgets doing the rounds. I think Spider-Man 2 is very good at it. Like, it's mind-blowing how much Insomniac have turned over. Like, in the last, 3 years? We've had, like, 3 Spider-Man games, Ratchet and Clank Rift Apart, and the remaster of... I guess if you class the remaster of Spider-Man as one of those 3 games. But even in the last 5 years, you can extend that to the first Spider-Man game. That's an insane turnaround, especially compared to someone like Rockstar or whoever. And Insomniac themselves, the literal devs are saying, we don't crunch, we've figured it out. We all work remotely, we have this specific model that we work off. And I guess I would argue that you can start to see some of the cracks in Spider-Man 2. Like, that was the buggiest Insomniac game I've played. It crashed on me 3 times. There was quite a lot of instances where things weren't loading. But it's not a buggy game. It was just that buggy compared to their bar. But still, I would take that as like a... I would still take a game from one of the veteran studios every couple of years rather than waiting, in Rockstar's case, 10 years or something like that. So I'd hope that like there's a way forward, basically, than not waiting an entire generation for something, and that you could get something like another Mass Effect trilogy within a console generation if it was all budgeted properly.
Yeah, no.
But maybe that's just impossible.
Again, like whenever we talk about this, man, I just feel like I'm an old man yelling at a cloud. Like, it's just, I miss... I guess it's partially nostalgia based, but I do miss when things were a little bit more frequent. Maybe what we're missing here is licensed games. Bring back licensed games to fill in the gaps a bit more. Give me a good old movie tie-in.
Have you seen? Speaking of them, they brought them back, but they're not good. There's the Kong Skull Island game, which
not
is
a movie
not
tie-in.
That.
I mean, it's a terrible licensed
game. It's a TV
game.
Show.
Yeah,
true.
It's a TV licensed game. TV show.
Oh yeah, it's based on the cartoon. There's like a Netflix Kong Skull Island anime show thing.
That's
and it's based
why
on that.
It looks like a cartoon. Oh.
It does. It is. There's also the Aang game, the Avatar game where you play as Aang and the rest of the gang in that. But
Aang
that's not the gang with two A's. That's not reviewing very well either. But it's like there's been a little bit of a push to sort of do those mid tier ones. The Samurai Jack game was brilliant from a couple of years ago.
Yes.
That's like super solid, nice little hack and slash game. Knows exactly what it is. Doesn't overstay its welcome.
I retract
awesome.
My earlier question about that 80s action movie game. What I really want someone to do is make a video game based on the 2003 Duck Dodgers cartoon, or alternatively, a video game based specifically on the What's New Scooby Doo incarnation of Scooby Doo. Just opened up.
I would take more Looney Tunes games.
Yeah, you just opened up that like early 2000s Cartoon Network boomerang renaissance to me in my brain, and I want it all back again.
Yeah, we used to get like a steady stream of Looney Tunes games, like the Bugs and Taz games. There was Taz Wanted, like
Fight
the
for Fame,
Looney Tunes Racing. Oh, like man. That was cool, man. That was a nice little time to grow
if
up.
If you've
in.
Not watched it, I would recommend watching the Patrick Williams video on Looney Tunes and talking about like their cultural presence at the minute, because it's an interesting thing. Not for this podcast, but if you like Looney Tunes, it's worth listening to.
I love... Who's your favourite Looney Tune before we peace out?
Daffy. I love Daffy.
I like Taz.
Specifically, my favourite Daffy cartoon is the Great Piggy Bank Caper, which is... Right. It's a parody of Dick Tracy, where he plays Duck Tracy. That's by Bob Clampett, and it's one of the most gorgeous, most brilliant, hilarious animation you'll ever watch.
I'm always a big Taz fan. His debut was great. But just all the stupid noises, and he's just like a big metalhead, and it's
come
great. And I like
come to Tasmania.
His solution to everything.
Boobity Bob.
Is it eat every single thing or make it into a sandwich? Just put bread around it and put it in his mouth. Anyway, this has been the Entitled Partner Podcast. The UBP, the UBP, the UBP, the UNBP. Ivan Scott Tilford, that's been Ewan Parson. A massive thank you to all of you for sending in your questions, and we'll catch you next week. Goodbye.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.